Hello, and welcome back to Automotive, the Automotive Engineering History Podcast. I hope everyone's having a great day, and thank you for tuning in for this week's episode. For this week's episode, I decided to talk about some ridiculous cars. These cars, the numbers associated with them are just mind-boggling. And these cars are top fuel dragsters. They are the fastest accelerating cars in the world. They are the fastest drag cars ever made. They're fairly well known. They're the really long ones that have a pretty big wing on the back and aerodynamics in the front. And they are insanely powerful cars. I will admit that personally, I don't find drag racing all that exciting, but the engineering behind these cars is incredible. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about some major parts of the car. I'm going to talk about the engine, the fuel that these cars use, because they use very special, very certain fuel. I'm also going to talk about the tires, because obviously that's a very big part of drag racing. And I'm also going to talk about the aerodynamics that the car utilizes in order to not become an airplane, because they are going so incredibly quick. So, just to start things off, let's throw some general numbers out there. How fast do these top fuel dragsters go? About 330 miles per hour. And they cover 1,000 feet in under 4 seconds. They weigh about 2,000 pounds, and as I said, they're pretty long. To put that in some more common numbers, that gives these cars a 0 to 60 time of 0.8 seconds, which is mind-boggling. I mean, they are incredibly quick cars. Obviously, this is the only thing these cars do. You cannot do anything else with them, and absolutely everything is designed to help them go as fast as possible in a straight line. So, incredible engineering, but very, very specific engineering at the same time. So, let's get into probably the most important part of the car that allows them to go this quick. The engine. So, what engine is able to produce the kind of power required to go 330 miles per hour and cover 1,000 feet in under 4 seconds? By the way, 1,000 feet is not a quarter mile. And usually quarter miles are thought of as the distance that drag race cars go, but due to safety concerns, they actually shortened the distance that these cars drive, so they actually don't drive a quarter mile. They drive 1,000 feet instead, which is a little bit less. So I thought that was a little interesting that they're actually not quarter mile drag cars, but that's because going 330 miles per hour for a quarter mile, or part of a quarter mile, is pretty dangerous. So to increase safety, they actually shortened the overall length that the cars need to travel. Anyway, back to the engine. All top fuel dragsters use basically the same engine. And interestingly, it's not even that big of an engine. It is a 500 cubic inch V8. The overall engine architecture is based off of a 1960s Chrysler Hemi. So really they're kind of using an old engine. Obviously they make new ones and they're very different, from the stock Hemis that were made, but the core architecture is essentially an engine from the 1960s. And the engines are limited to 500 cubic inches. It's a rule, that was decided by the governing body of top fuel drag racing that said the biggest engine that these cars can have is 500 cubic inches. So, funny enough, this means that actually a fair amount of street engines are not legal for use in top fuel drag racing. They wouldn't work anyways, as we'll get into, but just based off displacement, it's pretty easy to get a bigger engine in a street car if you want to. The block of the engine is machined out of solid billet aluminum, and so they basically just take a giant block of aluminum and use a CNC machine to drill out all the cylinders and all the ports that they need. The head is made the same way. It's machined out of a solid block of aluminum. Probably the most interesting thing is that both the block and the head have no water jackets. There is no circulating water in the engine to help cool it. This is due to the fact that having that those passages, having the water jacket in the block, would actually make the block too weak to handle the power that the engine is capable of making. Cooling of the engine is accomplished by the fuel and by the oil, and because the engines only run for a very short amount of time, it's not really a concern of overheating because, I mean, they're going at max power for just a couple seconds at most. And so really, cooling isn't actually that big of a deal, and it's pretty easy to do with the fuel. So yeah, no water jacket to cool these engines at all. The engine is also supercharged, so it uses force induction, so it shoves a lot of air into the engine. And so how much power does this V8 make? I mean, I don't know, let's, if we look at street cars that are really, really highly tuned and very powerful, 1,000 horsepower, 1,500 horsepower, not even close. Top fuel dragsters have engines that produce somewhere in the range of 8,000 to 11,000 horsepower. These are also estimates because there is no dyno that can handle these cars, so there's not really a way to measure the horsepower produced. So these figures are just kind of estimations on the airspeeds and calculations done to be like, it's probably in the ballpark of 8,000 to 11,000 horsepower, which is absolutely insane. 1,000 of that horsepower is just used to drive the supercharger. That's how much energy it takes to turn the supercharger and to force air into the engine. It sucks up 1,000 horsepower of the total power produced. Obviously, that's not a big deal when you're producing 8,000 horsepower, but the supercharger sucks up a good amount of that. Obviously, you get more benefit than loss, though. Otherwise, they wouldn't use the superchargers. To put this insane power into other words, these engines are making 15 horsepower per cubic inch of displacement. It's mind-boggling. The supercharger can create 60 psi of air pressure, and the air velocity of the air coming out of the supercharger is around 250 miles per hour. So these engines are just being shoved full of air by this supercharger. You know, that's obviously a big reason why they can make such insane power. Interestingly, the engines don't actually rev that high, and this is because they want to make as much torque as possible and not actually horsepower. And horsepower usually comes at a max at higher RPMs. So these engines usually make maximum torque between 6,000 and 6,300 RPMs. Red line of the engine, usually in the ballpark of 8,000 RPM. So they're actually fairly low revving engines. What does it feel like for the driver to take off with 8,000 horsepower pushing you forward? Well, it's more intense than going to space. These cars create about 5 G's of acceleration. That's 5 times the force of gravity on the driver. To put that in perspective, the space shuttle pulls just 3 G's of acceleration. These drivers are just kind of holding on for dear life and hoping to keep the car going in a straight line as they experience more force than astronauts experience when they launch into space. I mean, these cars are kind of unbelievable. I mean, it's amazing that they exist and can go that quick with that amount of acceleration. Obviously, the cars are extremely loud. I mean, they just have a straight pipe right off of the engine for exhaust. I mean, they are deafening. They create enough loudness, if you will, that you can definitely have your hearing damaged if you don't wear hearing protection. A fun little experiment was done with a group of scientists that study earthquakes. These scientists brought sensors to the drag strip and measured the vibrations of two top fuel dragsters leaving the line. And the vibration and the sound created by them leaving the line equates to enough vibration to register as a small earthquake on the Richter scale. So I'm going to say it every time I say a fact, but it's just unbelievable. I mean, they are making 8,000 horsepower. They are pulling 5 G's of acceleration. They have 60 PSI of forced induction pressure, and they basically create a small earthquake every time they launch. They're insane. That's the only way to put it. Unsurprisingly, though, these engines don't last very long. They're well-built and they're definitely tough, but with any engine making 8,000 horsepower, it's going to kind of fall apart. That engine is experiencing incredible forces, and they kind of destroy themselves every single run. Due to this, the engines are torn down and repaired and rebuilt after every single run. So the car lines up, you know, lights go off, takes off, sets whatever time it does, gets back to the pits, and immediately the team rips apart the engine, checks everything, and replaces most things. Parts that are commonly replaced include the clutch, the pistons, the connecting rods, the rings, and the spark plugs. So they kind of rebuild the entire engine after every run, and this entire rebuilding needs to occur in just 50 minutes, because that's the time given to the team to completely rebuild the engine for the next run. Also, I found it interesting that they start this car and let it warm up, and then once it's warm, they actually shut it off immediately and then change the oil. This is because the fuel mixes with the oil and kind of destroys it, doesn't let it lubricate very well. So after just warming up the car, the oil is replaced. Competition in top fuel dragsters really comes down to tuning. These cars are very similar to one another. I mean, they all use the same engine, the same fuel, the same tires. It's all very similar. So what separates the competitors is tuning the engine, depending on the conditions at the track at that day. If it's colder, they have less grip, and so they might not be able to use full power, and they need to decide how much power to remove. And so really it comes down to tuning the car to the conditions that allow a dragster to beat out the other ones at that competition. There is also no transmission, because there's no way you're going to shift fast enough, and a transmission would probably just destroy itself. So instead, a centrifugal clutch rapidly moves through 5 stages of engagement, and so each one of those engagements essentially change the final drive ratio, and so it kind of acts like a transmission. So when you take off versus going at full speed, you have a different gear ratio, but it all comes down to the clutch, and there's not actually any transmission on the car. The clutch destroys itself during this process. The clutch plates will actually weld themselves together. Why not? It's insane. But yeah, it runs down the track and the clutch spins and different plates mesh together, give it different drive ratios. And by the end of it, at least 2 of those plates are welded together. And so the clutch always needs to be replaced after a run. What really allows these cars to make the horsepower that they do is the fuel. Even with the supercharger, there's no way you can get 8,000 horsepower using gasoline. It's just not really possible. So, they don't use gasoline. These cars use a fuel that is called nitromethane. And interestingly, nitromethane was originally created as a solvent for use in dry cleaning. And someone figured out that you can use it as a fuel in drag racing. But the key point, or the key advantage of nitromethane, is the fact that it actually brings its own oxygen with it. I've talked about it in a lot of other episodes, but the limiting factor when it comes to making power in an engine is air. It's easy to get fuel into the engine, but that fuel needs air, or specifically oxygen, to combust, and it's a lot harder to get the oxygen in than it is to get the fuel in. So the idea with nitromethane is that there's essentially oxygen already in the fuel. The chemical structure of nitromethane has an O2 molecule. And when the nitromethane is burned, that O2 is released, which basically puts it into the combustion reaction, and so it can burn more fuel, because the more fuel you burn, the more oxygen you get. And so there's just oxygen with the fuel. The fuel brings basically everything that is needed to have a really strong combustion, which obviously translates to more power. To throw some numbers at you, in a standard gasoline engine, the engine needs about 15 pounds of air to burn 1 pound of gas. However, for nitromethane, the engine only needs 1.7 pounds of air to burn a pound of nitromethane. So it's roughly a 1 to 2 ratio versus a 1 to 15 ratio. The most interesting thing is if you look at the actual chemical potential energy within the fuels, gasoline has more potential energy per unit volume than nitromethane. If you have the same amount of each fuel, there is more energy in the gasoline, which is counterintuitive. If the gasoline has more energy, why does the nitromethane allow top fuel dragsters to create 8,000 horsepower? It all comes down to the fact that you can shove in way, way more nitromethane than you can shove in gasoline and have it combust nicely because of the fact that nitromethane brings its own oxygen. So these cars use an incredible amount of fuel. Roughly, these cars use 1.3 gallons of nitromethane per second at peak torque. 1.3 gallons per second. That has to be like the least efficient engine ever. I mean, it makes unbelievable power, but that uses so much fuel. And in order to do this, the fuel line itself is 2.5 inches in diameter. I mean, they just literally dump fuel into these engines. It is a continuous high-pressure fire hose of nitromethane into the engine, and that's what allows them to make unbelievable power. Also interestingly, nitromethane doesn't really burn very quickly. That's another reason why the engines actually rev a little bit slower, or don't rev as high, is because compared to gasoline, nitromethane takes a little bit longer to ignite. And the reason for this is because the nitromethane actually enters the engine as a liquid. It is a liquid within the cylinder. And there's a little bit of vaporized fuel on top, which gets ignited much easier, and then that ignition helps to vaporize the rest of the liquid fuel in there, which then fully combusts. But that conversion from liquid to vapor takes a little bit longer, so it's a slower burning fuel. Igniting this fuel is also very important, obviously, and when you ignite it is extremely important. Because that's really what helps control the engine and have it not just destroy itself on this unbelievable amount of fuel being shoved into it. So the ignition systems are very important and obviously very beefy. They use twin magnetos and 2 spark plugs per cylinder. And for a time, 3 spark plugs were actually used per cylinder, but this was banned pretty quickly. So nowadays it's just 2 spark plugs per cylinder. The amount of energy created in the magnetos is insane. They deliver 1.2 amps of current across each of the spark plug gaps. That may not sound like a lot, but 1.2 amps is a lot of current. Most street ignition systems have 0.3 amps across the gap of the spark plugs. Hot Rod Magazine puts it well, I think. They said, quote, "Think of those MSD magnetos as the equivalent of an engine-driven arc welder, and you get the idea," end quote. So they use a lot of current and a very, very strong spark, if you will, to make sure this fuel is ignited when it should, and ignited well enough to convert the liquid state into vapor state and have a nice combustion. Also, the amount of energy and the heat during a race, those just under 4 seconds, actually burn away the spark plugs. They get absolutely destroyed. And so by the end of the race, some cylinders actually just aren't firing because the spark plug was destroyed in the previous 3 seconds. And so that's another reason why the spark plugs need to be replaced after every run, is because they're literally non-existent after just one run. Now it's time to talk about tires. These tires need to handle a lot. I mean, they have 11,000 horsepower behind them, and they need to grip and deal with that amount of energy. Each tire costs roughly $917 per tire, and they are expected to last about 1.5 miles, and then they're trash. Or sometimes they'll be given to lower tiers of drag racing, because those tiers aren't insane and can still use the tires that have previously been on top fuel dragsters. And so that's a nice little recycling that is done. But basically, after 1.5 miles for the use in top fuel dragsters, the tire is no good. These tires are obviously very large, 36 inches tall, 17.5 inches wide, and weigh about 48 pounds. This is the rear tires. The front tires are very, very skinny and basically do nothing but make sure that the car stays in a straight line. And they're skinny to reduce friction. So all of this that I'm talking about are the rear tires. So I'm going to break down kind of each stage of a drag race and what the tire is doing. The first thing that happens is a driver does a burnout at the start of the race, and this warms up the tire and helps to increase the grip of the tire. This is common among all motorsports. I mean, like Formula One, warming up your tires is very important because obviously you're trying to get as much grip out of them as possible. And the way they do it in drag racing is they do a burnout, and that gets a nice amount of heat into the tire pretty quickly. The air pressure on the tire is very low, usually between 6 psi and 10 psi. This allows the tire to deform a lot under the massive torque and help it to increase grip. So when everything's set to go and they're lined up and the light turns green and they take off, the tires deform a lot. If you ever watch a slow motion video of these tires at the start of a race, they really wrinkle and they get absolutely twisted under the amount of torque. And this is actually what they want. All those wrinkles that are created in the tire under the torque help to increase the contact patch that the tire has with the ground, which increases grip. This contact patch is roughly 250 square inches. After this initial twisting and the car is moving at a higher velocity, the tire actually gets taller. It gets deformed upwards and gets narrower, again, thanks to just the massive amount of torque that's being applied to it. And this is, again, exactly what you want, because after that initial grip, you then want to try to reduce the friction that the tire has with the road so it doesn't slow you down. And so making the tire taller and more narrow reduces this rolling resistance and allows the car to reach a higher top speed than would be possible if the tire didn't deform. Also, the height of the tire increasing actually increases the final drive ratio of the car, which also aids in getting to higher top speeds. When the car slows down, the contact patch increases again, which helps to slow the car, although obviously, most of the slowing is actually done through parachutes because the traditional braking system, which is on the car, but the braking system on its own has no hope of stopping a car going that quickly in a reasonable amount of time. So most of the work is done by a pair of parachutes. Finally, aerodynamics, pretty simple. They got a big wing on the front and on the back. These are done to give it lots of downforce, about 5,000 pounds once they get up to their fastest speed. And this helps the car stay on the ground and absolutely not take off, because if any air got underneath the car at these speeds, it would just absolutely toss the car like it was nothing. So aero is very important on helping keep the car on the ground and helping to keep the tires gripping and the car accelerating. And so those are the main points of a Top Fuel dragster. Again, like every episode, there's lots of details that if you want to learn more, you can certainly look into, especially tuning and the little nuances that are built into this kind of racing. But absolutely nutty engineering. I mean, just the 8,000 horsepower, the no cooling of the engine, the clutch welding itself together, it's insane. And it results in the fastest cars ever made, at least for going in a straight line for 1,000 feet. That's going to be it on the Top Fuel Dragsters. I hope you enjoyed. If you'd like to support the podcast, means a lot. Leave a review or a follow on whatever platform you're listening. You're also welcome to follow me on social media. My Instagram is automotive.podcast. My Facebook is at automotivepod. And my Twitter is at automotivepodcast. I post Carfax and will let you know about upcoming episodes and just generally what's going on with the podcast. So if you want to give me a follow there, check it out. Much appreciated. Also, if you want to request any episodes, specific cars throughout history, or specific race series like this episode, if you want to request it, I'm happy to provide that episode for you. Other than that, thank you again for listening, and I will see you next week.